Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yo, what up? Tinky and Tierney, ready to go. Man, Baylor, woof. That was a beat down. Let's get into it. We got a lot to hit here on this Wednesday around the country, CBS Sports Radio. Tuesday, Tiki and Tierney, coming to you from our Rocket Mortgage studio. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Well, weren't we all wrong? I mean, we were wrong. Wrong. Raise your hand if you were wrong. Put your hand
colossally.
Up,
colossally.
Thank you.
Colossally wrong.
Yes, we were woefully erroneous in our prediction of this game. We didn't give Baylor much of a shot.
Mm-mm.
I think I went so far as to say if it's a blowout, and I did say it would be a game, you know, with 4 minutes to go, I thought it would be a game. But I said if there's a blowout, Baylor's going to be the one that's getting waxed here. How did we miss this by that much? How do we miss it?
Look, I think it comes down basically to the fact that we didn't give Baylor enough credit for being as good as they are. We know that
Clearly.
They're a good shooting team, like, but we knew how good of a shooting team they are. They led the nation in three-point percentage, and they just dominated from there from the very beginning. I mean, when this thing ran out to 9-0 right away, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Stem the tide here. Get a shot. They couldn't get – Gonzaga couldn't get a good shot. You know, and you looked at the size advantage that Baylor had, the shooting advantage that Baylor had. But, BT, I can't help but think that Gonzaga was just out-coached and that they choked, BT.
Ooh,
they led the nation in scoring.
Words.
Look, they led the nation in scoring and field goal percentage all season long. 54 or so percent, I think, they shot from the field. They scored 91 points a game. 92 points a game, which is 5 or 6 points clear of the second-place scoring team, which I think was Colgate, at like 88 or something like 86 or something like that points per game. So they've just dominated. Historically great offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably got complacent thinking no matter what bad goes wrong, we can just outscore our opponent. But when you face a team like Baylor that is veteran or upperclassmen, I should say, veteran's the wrong word because these are all college kids, upperclassmen, they have size, they had a game plan. Mm-hmm. To me, Baylor thought that they could out-physical Gonzaga, and
yep,
that's exactly what they did. Contested every shot, got every big rebound, especially in that first quarter, or first half, I should say, and then knocked down the three-point shots, whereas Gonzaga couldn't find an easy bucket to save their life.
I'm thrilled you didn't lean on the, oh, they emptied the tank against the UCLA Bruins.
No,
and they were, thank
no.
God, that's where I thought you were going at first. Good.
No,
so
not at all.
We don't need to waste time on that. The reason why I disagree with how you position that is because, like, I don't even think it's a choke. I just think it's a bad matchup.
Mm.
And, you know, you look at Baylor's guards, they were getting up on Gonzaga. Now, it doesn't help when Jalen Suggs has 2 fouls in the first 3 minutes of the game.
Great point.
I'm not saying that changes the entire complexion. That would be a disservice to Baylor, who just came and stuck it to him. They came out of the tunnel, and they just clocked him right in the nose. And Baylor was, you know, really retreating the rest of the way. And the guards got up on Gonzaga's guards. The bigs did not allow Timmy to do what he does, not only finishing at the rim, which is what he does as well as any big in the country, but his passing prowess, which is something we've talked about, you know, certainly this entire tournament here. How far is this thing going to go? 9-0, 16-4, 21-6, 29-10. What the hell's going on here? Gonzaga, people need to know this, all right? Because we keep saying, well, they average 92 points. Okay. Gonzaga scored in their previous tournament wins, 98, 87, 83, 85, and 93. They scored 102 points on Kansas, maybe not a vintage Kansas team, mm-hmm. but still a good team. They dropped 99 on number three Iowa, or at the time, number three Iowa. They dropped 98 on your Cavs. Not a vintage Cavs team, but their defensive principles is good
nobody,
as anybody.
Nobody scores 98 on Virginia. I don't care if you beat them by 20. You're not scoring 98.
Yep. Not many better coaches, if any, than Bennett, and their defensive principles carry over, even with a little bit of a drop-off in talent. They scored 116 on Portland in a conference game. They scored 100 on the University of San Francisco in a conference game. They scored 106 on San Diego in a conference game. So we chose to illuminate that. And we were all captivated by the, hasn't happened since 1976, Bobby Knight. I mean, I said that so many times I'm tired of saying. I'm tired of hearing it. But that is a pretty lengthy historical point of reference. And that's what we latched onto. What we didn't latch onto enough is the Bears' defense. We can talk about their offensive prowess. You're right. They shoot the heck out of it, 40% from downtown, number one of the country there, about 85, 86 points a game themselves, only five or six fewer than Gonzaga. But in their tournament wins, they allowed 55. Mm-hmm. They allowed 63. They allowed 51 to Villanova. Granted, Villanova without Colin Gillespie, but still Villanova. They gave up 72, and they gave up 59 to second-seeded Houston. So while we were all enamored and, you know, gaga giddy over Gonzaga, and rightfully so, unblemished, couple of first-round picks, they're a lottery pick for sure, we just, listen, we got to call for what it is. We just didn't give Baylor the credit that they deserved.
Yeah,
period.
No, we should.
So there is to it.
We should give them more credit, too, because Scott Drew is a hell of a coach. Oh. And we've known that for years, obviously. His introductory press conference was epic, which we'll hear the sound in a minute here, mm-hmm. BT. But Scott Drew look, it's hard to convince kids to come to a school, I think, that has principles that are very religious. They're mm-hmm. Baptist University, first of all. Convince those kids then to stay. So if they're really good, convince them to stay. All right, because let's not forget, two of these guards were bouncing. They were out. They were going to the NBA. They were able to cut. They came back, and they were convinced by their head coach to stay and built on something that was epic or really good last year. I don't know if it was epic last year because they obviously didn't play in the NCAA tournament. They were really good last year.
They were very good.
And so they built on top of that. And I think it's circumstance, BT, because Gonzaga has never missed the NCAA tournament under Mark Few, because Gonzaga had the exact same type of scenarios, kids that were, you know, upperclassmen and staying in school and rehashing it again, bringing it back with a coach who we have so much respect for, who, by the way, scored all those points against all those teams that you're talking about. It was hard to look past Gonzaga. It just was, because they were undefeated at this point.
Yeah.
But riding side saddle with them, maybe not getting as much credit, was Baylor the whole time. It's not like Baylor came out of nowhere. They were riding right there the whole time. Yeah. It's just Gonzaga's shadow was so big, it was hard to look at them. And they commanded our attention on national championship night.
Teek, this might be the greatest turnaround in the history of college basketball. And before we play this stuff from Scott Drew, right, you know, people need to know this. And very well, it might be the most, and there's been a lot of college basketball scandals, right? You and I don't get too wrapped up in money, whatever.
No.
Not that we fully condone it.
Yeah, whatever. Kind of know what happens. It's like, all right, whatever. As long as you're not paying a guy kid $1 million, it's one thing.
Yeah. And the thing at Louisville because they're still kids and prostitutes, you can't, I mean, that's different. That's a different level of scorn. Mm-hmm. But in terms of just, you know, try to get players, giving them a few bucks, it is what it is. So you and I kind of gloss over that. But you look at what happened at Baylor in the early 2000s, I think, inarguably, the most disgusting scandal, certainly in the history of our lifetime.
Yeah.
And this goes back to 2003. There was a junior forward by the name of Patrick Dennehy who was murdered by his teammate, Carlton Dotson, who's still in jail, 35 years. Should get life, actually. I don't know why he only got 35. Well, he pled guilty. That's part of the reason. And when Dennehy, because he initially disappeared, they were supposed to go to a party together that night, and then they wound up finding Dennehy's car without the plates, and he, I don't know how long he disappeared for, but he disappeared for a while. And during the disappearance, the NCAA began to hover around the program and started to investigate them for different things. Rampant drug use, improper payments. Dave Bliss was their former coach, who's a sleazebag, was hit with a 10-year show cause for, quote, despicable behavior and unethical conduct, right? Wow. From 2003 to 2007, it's basically half a decade in terms of playing, 36 total wins they had with Scott Drew, by the way, total, 13 of which came in conference play. 13 conference wins, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 5 years. They won 13 Big 12 games, and going back to 2003, Scott Drew stood at a podium and believed when he said this.
At Baylor University, I did not come to go to the NCAA tournament. We came to win games at the NCAA tournament. We came with a chance to win a national championship at Baylor University. We have the resources. We have the people. We have the leadership. And I think we have the family atmosphere to do it down here. And that's my goal in the next few years, to bring Baylor to that forefront. Now, America does love the little guys. And this is definitely a David versus Goliath situation. And it might take some time, but I can tell you this. Our staff will have the work ethic, the integrity, and the commitment to success needed to get this program where it needs to go. And the players I met with today stayed because they wanted you to cheer for them. And together, we're going to build something here, and I can't wait for the ride.
I'll be honest with you, Teague. That's, first of all, I mean, beyond prophetic, but that's the kind of thing, like, if you're in the room and you're a reporter at that point, you're not going to verbalize this, but to yourself, you're saying, oh, this guy's delusional. This guy's a good guy, but this guy's delusional. Like, he doesn't know. You got to respect the optimism here, but I mean, Scott, look around, buddy.
Look, at the end of the day, first of all,
incredible.
It is incredible, but it took him 18 years.
Doesn't matter.
It's not like it happened in 5 or 6 years.
Doesn't matter. This isn't Carolina or Duke, or this is not a basketball school. They were terrible before the scandal.
Job number one is to win the press conference.
Yeah.
Scott Drew knew how to win a press conference, and he won it. And obviously, it took almost two decades for it to come to bear. But look, you can draw on it, and I think it sounds phenomenal. But what else is he gonna say? I'm gonna suck.
Well, he doesn't have to say the guy's saying he's gonna win a championship. A player was just murdered.
What coach
doesn't think?
You
gotta put yourself in a mindset of 2003.
But what coach doesn't think that, right? Why go coach at a program?
I understand.
Like if you're an independent that's playing junior colleges, you know what I mean? And then you're talking about a national championship. That's a little bit crazy. But you're in the Big 12. It's not like you're in a non-Power 5 conference.
But you're in Kansas's conference.
True.
Kansas.
But that gives you, I think, a target. You know, just to focus on, you know, Baylor and Scott Drew when he first came there. When you're in a conference like the Big 12 with Kansas, or even the ACC with Duke and North Carolina, and you're one of the middling or even, you know, bottom feeders, at least you have a target. Like, at least you're looking up there saying, I want to be that. And so if you're convincing enough and you're a good enough orator, as clearly Scott Drew is, you can walk into a kid's living room, and especially if the faith is right. And I mean this religiously.
Yes.
If the faith is right, you can give this commanding, powerful presentation and say, at the end of the day, without cursing, obviously, we are going to get Kansas, right? That's our job. And I need you, young man, to help me get there. I know you're 6'6", or 6'10", and 195 pounds, and you're going to be a NBA player in the future, but I need you right now with Baylor to get Kansas. Are you in with me? And the answer is yes for a lot of those kids.
Yeah, but not early it wasn't. If his message wasn't convincing, then no one's going there.
Clearly it was convincing because they did get the kids.
But here's the thing. I know, but think about this, Teague. And by the way, winning the press conference to me, and I don't think that you were inferring this, but when I hear winning the press conference, I think of Campbell in Detroit.
No, hold on.
Let me just finish. Even Rex Ryan, like, winning the press conference. I'm not here to kiss Belichick's rings.
Yeah.
Scott, I believe that some coaches go there, like, walk up to that podium with the full intention of winning the press conference and then winning games.
Yeah.
I don't think that was Scott Drew. I think Scott Drew is just simply at his core a man of humble virtue,
yeah,
Christianity, and great coaching acumen.
Yeah.
And that there was nothing pre-planned or packaged. He believed it.
Of course he believed it.
He believed it.
I believed it.
But how do you believe that in 2003 is my question.
Because he took the job, and he has a faith, and he believes in it.
Yeah,
and
I guess.
He knew he had to change the culture of Baylor. And if he went up there and he was soft and, I don't know, predictable, it wouldn't have gotten the trick done. By the way, Dan Campbell, that is Dan Campbell. Like, he wasn't trying to win the press conference. That
he laid it on a little thick. I hear you. I get it, but he laid it on a little thick. Just like Rex laid it on a little thick.
I've known Dan Campbell for a long time.
I know you have.
I've heard him tell some Texas A&M stories, and they were like that, right? Exactly. Talking about these rivalry games with Texas, they were like that. And he was, and it just, me and him and two other people sitting around a table, he gets, that's who he is. I think Scott Drew is you got to be authentic. To me, so instead of, like, telling you what winning the press conference is, yeah, being authentic, like being who you are and conveying that without ambiguity.
Yeah,
there's no doubt.
That's part of it.
Who Dan Campbell is. There's no doubt who Scott Drew was when he took that job. There's no doubt who Tony Bennett is. Like, there's guys who, you, when they win the press conference, you're like, that fits. And there's other guys that get up there.
But nobody said that back in 2003.
Nobody was paying attention in 2003.
But if you were, now you were, but you were playing. But if you were paying attention, you
would.
That's what I'm saying. That's why when I say that this is. I think inarguably the most disgusting basketball scandal of our lifetime.
Oh, I'm not arguing
that.
No,
I know you're not. But I think you're minimizing.
I'm not minimizing anything. I'm telling you he's great. And you knew it then because he won the press conference.
Nobody knew it then. That's nobody knew it then. Hmm. You look at him saying, this guy looks like a vanilla, and I say this with a smile because he's a man of faith and I like him. He looked like this vanilla, okay, boring geek is what, okay, he looked like. He didn't win the press conference. Nobody's sitting there saying, yo, that's my coach. I'm going to play
Baptist,
that.
It's a Baptist.
This guy's a snooze fest.
It's a Baptist university.
Stop.
I
know what it is.
You're not going in there like you would go into Kentucky or one of these other major powerhouses and scream fire and brimstone because it's inauthentic to the university. They hired him because he was that way. They knew he was a great coach. They knew he had a faith-based, which is a faith-based approach,
yeah,
which is calming. You know what I mean?
But Matt Rhule wasn't the faith-based guy. They hired him. Not every hire they make is a faith-based hire.
Okay, but Matt Rhule was a different hire.
Why?
You know what I mean? Because they needed someone who could bring some influence from the NFL, so to speak. They knew he was going to go back eventually, right? Scott Drew in 2003, as you chronicled, was trying to overcome and change the image, oof, of a program that was in a disgusting state, especially for a religious institution.
Player was murdered.
By a teammate. I completely get it.
Man.
Scott Drew was the right hire, and he authentically won the press conference. And 18 years later, he fulfilled that promise.
Yeah, but 18 years later is when we're saying that he won the press conference. My point is, and we're getting off the path, it doesn't matter, but nobody said that in 2003, which is my only point.
Are you sure?
Well, I didn't say it. I was on the air, I was doing a national show. I remember playing clips from his press conference.
Okay.
I was like, all right, this guy's a snooze fest. If you want my honest reaction,
mm-hmm,
I was thinking nobody's going to run to Baylor to play for this cat. I mean, his concepts might be incredible, but I didn't think he resonated. Now, to be fair,
yep,
I don't know that I fully incorporated the aspect of religion to the degree that I needed to. I'll grant you that. But I think the most important question is, what other school is going to give their coach 18 years?
Hmm.
I mean, think about that. I mean, 2003, this man shows up at a press conference, humble, man of faith, we're going to do it this way, we're going to do support group as a university, and then you win 32 games over the first 5 years of his tenure. You're like, oof, boy, this is 13 conference wins over 5 years. And even the most you know, the ones with the most conviction in the room that consented to his hire in the first place were probably a little rattled at the lack of results 5 years into his tenure.
Let me ask you honestly. Do you think Baylor, athletic director, basketball alumni, whoever, actually cared whether or not he won or not in his first 3 or 4 years?
At that point, no. They just had to salvage the reputation of the school.
They needed someone to come in and change the culture
of Baylor
basketball. Scott Drew was that guy.
Yeah.
And he won it at the press conference. You knew it at the press conference. You knew what you were getting at the press conference. It took time for him to get into those the right living rooms and convince these young men to come and believe not only in the program and the process of winning program, but also believing in the faith. We've had Macy Oteague on twice.
Yep.
Right. The one thing I always come away with when we've talked to him is how faith driven he is. And he's a superstar, right? This kid. I mean, he's going to play in the NBA. I don't know how great he's going to be, but whatever. He's going to play in the NBA. He's going to get drafted. He almost left early last year. Jared Butler is the exact same way. Both of these guys, they have, like, it matters. And so to convince those type of athletes to come to a school like that is hard, right? It's why Bronco Mendenhall swinging over to college football at BYU was so successful, right? He would find the Mormon kids who not only believed in the faith but were these uber athletes and easily could have went somewhere else, Hawaii or wherever. And he drew them into BYU.
Jim McMahon, Steve Young, well, Zach Wilson.
He was way after them, but you know
what
I mean.
No, I'm just saying in general, the school.
That's right. And so it takes the right person to win at schools like that.
Yeah.
And Scott Drew was the perfect person.
Well,
and whether you rolled your eyes at him or not, back in 2003, he won that press conference.
Okay.
And that's all that matters to me.
All right.
And it finally happened 18 years
later. All that matters to me is that he won last night. Like, I don't grading the press conference is insignificant to me.
Then why play it?
Because it just shows the evolution of the program, not so much about...
Yeah, he believed it in 2003, so you play that for a reason.
So I can't say, yes, I was the one who said play it.
I know.
I like it.
I know.
I just didn't sit there in real time and grade the press conference like I did Rex Ryan, like I did Campbell. It just didn't pop me that way, whether it's right or wrong.
They're both in the NFL.
It's a little different. It's a collegiate... presentations is just that, more collegiate. I got you. So we know that Scott Drew is the right guy for Baylor. That is undeniable. We know that Mark Few is the right guy for Gonzaga. But Teak, I mean, he had the squad this year, and they didn't get it done. Whether it's a choke, whether it's the better team won, whatever it is, we've got to talk about Mark Few and how we view him today versus how we viewed him yesterday. We'll get to that coming up next. Teak and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Alrighty, Teak and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. Hopefully everybody's having a great Tuesday here. Championship game. Not what we thought, not what we saw coming, but still pretty amazing nonetheless. Congrats to Baylor. Just an amazing accomplishment. We're going to get to hour number two here in the next hour. So Darnold off to Carolina, that actually broke during the show yesterday. And Teak and I will explore some other quarterbacks who had success with their second axe with different teams that did not draft them. So we'll get to that coming up. And, you know, listen, Teak, I mean, we talked about this with Torrey Hunter, and you and I have talked about this a little bit. The fans are not relenting. They were flinging trash cans last night. One was a fake one, like a blow-up one, and one was a real one when Jose Altuve stepped to the dish. Angels fans who are not known to be, you know, like Philly fans or even Yankee fans or maybe White Sox fans, I mean, they're usually pretty calm. They were flinging trash cans on the field last night.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy. I mean, it's not out of hand, but if this thing persists like this, I guess the Astros will feel the retribution that they neglected to feel all of last year. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. That's coming up hour number two. So, again, you want to get us on Twitter, Teak and Tierney, Instagram as well, same deal. Teak, we all know Mark Few is great. He's terrific. But I need you to explain to me, what is the difference in how we perceive his career, like to this point right now without a championship, versus how we perceive a quote-unquote elite quarterback without a Super Bowl or a terrific golfer without a major? What's the difference?
Well, first of all, it's really hard to win a national championship in college basketball because it is all matchups. You mentioned that earlier with Baylor. the matchup just didn't favor them. They were outsized. And interestingly, for a team that scored 92 points on the season, they were outshot. You know, Baylor just a better shooting team than we anticipated. But I also think, and I said this, BT, I think they were outclassed and outcoached a little bit here, and they choked because when you play as well as Baylor, as Gonzaga did all season long, I mean, I think there was a streak for about maybe 15 or even more games where they were winning by double-digit points easily, and that double digits means like 18 to 20 something.
Oh, they were waxing everybody
in a lot of these games, and they coasted.
But the conference isn't that good.
Of course, it's not that good. But they were coasting, yeah. And so you when you're that good, yeah. When you have the number one scoring offense in college basketball, when seemingly you can do anything, you run any play. It's like it felt like they could run any play, and it was going to be successful, and someone was going to come clean at the baseline or at the in the paint and have an easy layup where they knock down a mid-range jumper or even some three pointers here and there. Right? It felt like everything they did was easy. And so when you have it that easy and then you get challenged on it, like UCLA challenged them, it snaps you into focus, right? But they still scored
93 points in overtime.
93
yeah.
in overtime
yep.
against UCLA. You're mm-hmm. saying to yourself, all we got to do is score. Mm-hmm. All we got to do is score. Even if we get challenged, all we got to do is score. It's going to work itself out. And with that being your only game plan, because honestly, BT, that's what it felt like watching that game last night. All we got to do is score. We'll use our athleticism. We'll keep trying the same thing. They ran the same play over and over and over. And every now and then it worked. They'd get a slip screen back to Timmy. He'd have an easy layup. But I felt like they just weren't prepared for the difference in scheme that Baylor gave them on both ends of the court, BT.
Yeah.
They were out-rebounded. They were nobody crashing the boards. And when you take the opening possession and you get out-rebounded twice, Baylor had two offensive rebounds before they finally knocked down the shot, right? It set the tone for the entire day. There was never an adjustment. There was never a, let's box out this guy and bring someone in from the weak side to get the rebound. There was never anything.
Yeah,
they kept trying the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And that's why they ultimately lost this game.
Teague, I don't think there was an adjustment to make. Unless they went in to halftime and ingested steroids and it had an immediate impact, they were getting their brains beaten the rest of the way. That's why I don't look at this as a choke job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look at this as, well, granted, they certainly underperformed when you're 22 points, whatever is below your average.
Yeah.
Something went awry. But everything that Gonzaga does well, it's very easy to identify just how much of an answer Baylor has to offset that. They've got multiple bigs, so that's 15 fouls, first of all, against Timmy. And Timmy doesn't have a muscle on him, so that's neutralized. Their guards, who generally do whatever they want, were pushed around by football player linebackers. I mean, Mitchell's got a linebacker body.
True, but
great defensive player, as we know. You know, and I tweeted last night, first of all, it's not a fluke, even though I was dead wrong in my assessment. Now, I had Gonzaga and Baylor on our bracket challenge getting to the championship, but I had Gonzaga winning. So, man up, I was dead wrong. I thought Gonzaga might win going away. However, I got to tell you, now seeing them on the court at the same time, dissecting them through a different lens, that like it's one thing to watch Baylor versus Houston and Gonzaga versus UCLA. Until you see them on the same court, for me, at the same time, it didn't trigger this awareness. Like I tweeted, if they play 10 times, I think Baylor's winning 7, maybe 8. They're better.
I agree. BT.
So how was that a choke job?
Because the team that averaged 92 points a game had 10 points in the first 10 minutes. I don't care what the size disadvantage is. I don't care how more athletic the other team is. They scored 10 points in the first 10 minutes. Like, you can't sit here and tell me that they played 10 times that Gonzaga is going to have 10 points in 10 minutes. It's inconceivable.
No, I'm not saying that Baylor's going to win by 20, but I'm saying Baylor's going to probably win by 6, 7, 8, 9 points. It's just better, tougher.
If they would have kept their foot on the gas, they could have beat them by 40.
They could have. They probably could have.
Gonzaga didn't do anything well like they usually do. They weren't crisp with their passing. There were so many I mean, when I say choke job, I mean a guy who has consistently been good, who is reliable, who makes the right pass, who gets the outlet pass, the bounce pass. He tried another one of those. He got intercepted, right? You got their guards, both of them, coming down the court and literally turning it over without being touched. Mm. Like just over bouncing it and tipping it out of bounds, right? That's choking to me. That when you get into the moment and you do something uncommon to what you historically have done, that is choking.
I got you.
Gonzaga choked.
Okay.
He scored 10 points in 10 minutes and had 8 turnovers.
I'll buy that.
In the first 8 minutes.
No, Teague, I'll buy that. The thing that is confusing to me, now if I said if Baylor played Gonzaga 10 times, I think they'd win 7, maybe 8.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, I agree, and then you said that they choked. If you would have said, I disagree.
No, it's different, BT.
But you're admitting that Baylor is sizably better.
Hold on one second, BT. The Baylor Bears destroyed Gonzaga, right? I know it was only 16. It could have been 30, right? And the reason it was that big of a disparity is because Gonzaga made mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake, which they don't do. That's a choke job. Now, on par, if Gonzaga plays like they played all season long, and they scored 90-something points.
But Baylor won't let them.
Hold on. That's the point.
Hold on.
If they scored 90-something points, I'm just saying, if they shoot well, they knock down three-pointers, they pass the ball, get the extra pass, they corral the ball, they don't turn the ball over, and they score 90 points.
Uh-huh.
I think Baylor scores 95. I think Baylor's better. So I can agree with you.
Okay,
but what
I got
I'm saying
you, right.
is that Gonzaga played like crap. It was probably the most disappointing part of the whole night for me, BT.
Maybe the whole tournament, if you really think about
it. Without a doubt, because I expected them to be, like, precise.
So did I.
I used that word last week.
So did I.
They are so precise with everything they do. All I saw was sloppiness.
Well, you know what? I know we have to break, unfortunately, because this is awesome. But usually precision goes awry when the guy opposite you is about 15, 18 pounds of muscle heavier.
Yeah, but...
And a little more tenacious.
But here's the thing.
Precision kind of subsides.
For champions, it doesn't matter.
They're not a champion.
Find a way. And
they're not a champion.
That's exactly right.
They've never been a champion.
That's exactly right.
That's what I'm saying.
You were saying the same thing, just saying it very differently.
We're saying it very differently, as we usually do on the show. I got you, Teague. So we're going to get back to this coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, obviously. Let's get the update from our buddy Rich Ackerman, see what Ack is cooking up. By the way, the Nets, some more injuries. The Lakers, no real positive report on theirs. How alarmed should we be with some of the best teams in the NBA based on the medical roll call? We'll get to that after Ack's update, which is right now. Here's Rich. All right. Inbounds, out of bounds coming up in a minute. First up, time for the Player of the Week, brought to you by Grainger. Taking a look at the one who got it done this week. It's big man DeAndre Ayton, the Phoenix former first overall pick. Has been playing pretty well, actually, lately. 27 points. The Suns went over the Rockets last night. Phoenix has ripped off 6 straight. And in that span, Ayton is averaging 15 points. And he's sitting on very efficient 63% for the field to go along with double-digit rebounds as well. So, not a superstar. Probably never will be, but a good solid piece, no doubt, for the Suns, who are rocking. Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. For all the ones who get it done, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, backed by 24/7 support and access to product experts. Call clickgrainger.com/safety or just stop on by.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Teague. So next hour, which is also next segment, we'll get into some quarterbacks, and a few obvious ones, but a few not so obvious ones, where the second act with different staffs, different organizations, different teams from the ones that drafted them found some real success. And that may or may not pertain to Sam Darnold, but I think it's a good conversation to have. And there's some other quarterbacks out there that are shifting around. Dwayne Haskins is on a different team now. Maybe he gets a second lease, and we'll see what happens with Jameis Winston, et cetera. But that's coming up next hour. And right now we get to inbounds, out of bounds. You ready to go? See what we got?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports, and often does. What's right, what's wrong, and who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right, here we go. We got some good ones, I think, today. First up, numero uno, take over the weekend. Tampa Bay Bucks defensive back Carlton Davis tweeted a derogatory anti-Asian word. After swift backlash, Davis immediately apologized, claiming he didn't know the word was racist. and that where he grew up, the word just meant lame. Bucks GM Jason Light released a statement yesterday defending Davis, citing his tireless work with social justice issues, and promised to help learn from this experience. So, we are satisfied with Davis's apology and the team's response in
around.
Yeah,
I'm going to say inbound to this. I think the team responded right to this. I guarantee you 90% of the non-Asian community in this country didn't know that this was a derogatory term either. So he immediately apologized after he was called on it. And I take him for his word. He has been a great citizen for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for that community, obviously, also as a player. So I'm going to say inbounds to this.
Yeah, I'm going to say inbounds as well. You know, you start getting into the waters of grading apologies, it can become a little muddy because you don't really know what's authentic, what's being said just to salvage one's career. But I think if you let common sense and you really approach these with an open mind, I think it's very easy to see that Carlton Davis meant what he wrote.
Yeah.
I really believe that. As for the GM, Jason Light, saying about, you know, his tireless work with social justice, which is great, but the social justice, you know, that he's fighting for, at least pertaining to Davis, I would prefer that it applies to every race. I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe I'm off on that. And if so, I would check myself there. I would disagree with the assertion, though, that roughly 90% of the non-Asian community doesn't know that word. I knew that that was a derogatory word when I was six. Like, I knew that that word...
I've never heard that word.
Maybe it's a Northeast thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a regional thing. It's just something I was very aware of. And I didn't grow up around a lot of Asians. I just didn't. High school, there were...
I was married to an Asian. I've never heard that word.
That's amazing. I can't believe you've never heard that word. Wait, so you've never heard that word until yesterday?
Exactly.
Wow. All right. That's I would still challenge the 90%, but that doesn't even matter. What does matter is whether or not it was an authentic, from-the-heart apology, unlike Kevin Durant, who basically just had issue with us taking up his time and that he was called out on it. Carlton Davis said the right thing, and it came across very sincere, and we move on. And hopefully the young man learns, and it seems like he will.
Are you in or are you out?
All right. Last night, James Harden returned to the court after missing two games with a hamstring injury, but played only 4 minutes against the Knicks before exiting. As we know, Kyrie Irving's missed 15 games this year for various reasons, while KD has missed 32. That hamstring has been a long, lingering issue. After sitting out all last season, coming back from the repaired Achilles, out west, the Lakers have been without LeBron and AD for weeks, and Frank Vogel admitted Davis, quote, still a ways away from returning. So in or out, you're more concerned about the Lakers' injury issues than you are about the Nets.
Yeah, this is easy. This is inbounds to me, BT, because the Lakers simply can't win without one of their stars. Now, they did pull through a little bit, and Schroeder, however you want to say his name, Dennis Schroeder, had a couple of good games when LeBron was out, and they were able to win a couple, but... without AD on the foreseeable future, on the horizon playing, and we're not that far away from the start of the postseason.
Nope. A couple weeks, three weeks.
Exactly. And LeBron's got at least another couple of weeks. I'm worried about the Lakers. When I look at the Brooklyn Nets, even without KD, they've been winning.
Yes.
And James Harden goes out, Kyrie scores 40. Right, so I actually have more faith in the supporting cast in Brooklyn than I do in L.A. So definitely Lakers inbounds.
Totally with you, and for the reasons that you said. Although I will say, it's maybe easy to gloss over things with the Nets because they did win. Excuse me, they did win last night. But if they're playing a team with more offensive firepower, lose that game.
Oh yeah, because they were down early.
They were down by about 11 at one point, exactly. And then the Knicks just are. I mean, Knicks are a good defensive team. They play hard. They just have a rough time putting the ball in the hole regularly. So, but Kyrie Irving was magnificent. And, you know, we've seen if one of the pieces is gone, as long as they have two of the three, really it comes down to this, strength in numbers.
Yeah.
The Lakers have two superstars. The Nets have three.
And a great shooter in Joe Harris.
And a great shooter in Joe Harris.
So they have like three and a half.
So, they, you know, they're really good. I'd like to see Kevin Durant get on the court, and for a hamstring, I know that he said it was probably more of a grade two than a grade one. He didn't really think that right away, and he's just being precautious. But you still miss 30-plus games.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. February 12th, last time he played a game when he hurt his hamstring, and he didn't even think it was that bad. But, yes, without either LeBron or AD, without both of them, they are going – I don't care if – they're going nowhere. I don't care if LeBron comes back and plays like LeBron from 12 years ago without AD. Mm-hmm. He's going home early, and the same thing. If LeBron's not there and AD plays like an MVP,
yep,
they're still going home early. So I'm with you.
Are you in or are you out?
No, I actually saw this live last night. I wanted to check Tatis at bats, and I was, you know, when you record things, you could obviously bounce around without missing anything. And he had a really frightening issue last night against the Giants. He's one of the rising stars in baseball, as we know. He's off to a rough start, whatever, it's early. But remember, he left the spring training game with an injured left shoulder. Now, Tatis began the season just 3-for-18. Again, it's baseball. It's a sport of failure. You don't overreact to that. But last night, he collapsed to the ground after a violent swing and miss, clutching. First, I thought it was the hamate bone, because he was actually holding his wrist. I didn't know if it was a hamate bone. Which happens to baseball players quite a bit. But as we found out, it's the shoulder. It's a partial shoulder dislocation, and they're going to obviously stick him in the MRI tube. And their skipper says, really, it's been an ongoing issue.
Yeah, that's the same one. And comes out, comes back in, and he's been dealing, you know, with that. And then obviously tonight, you know, it was the first time we've kind of seen it in game action. You know, obviously it's somewhat concerning, but we ask him, you know, every day, you feeling it, you know, and he's been doing his exercise, been doing his treatment, everything he can to, you know, strengthen it.
Mm. And get a look at the violent swing. I mean, that's not supposed to happen to a 35-year-old hitter, let alone a kid who's in his early 20s. That's a little problematic for me. So the Padres should shut Tatis down to repair the shoulder, even if it means sitting out the entire season. Tough question, in or out.
I mean, I would probably say inbounds of this, BT, because what it seems like he has is a torn labrum. The subluxation is basically, it's when you get outside of your normal range of motion.
Yep.
That labrum keeps it in place, keeps it stuck in there. And it was when he was all the way reached back, which is where you're not normally supposed to be after that violent swing. Mm-hmm. Just popped out. You could actually see it. It was
kind
of like that makes my stomach like curl when I see stuff like that. It's a long recovery from that. So I'm going to say inbounds, because I think sooner rather than later he's going to have the surgery. Might as well do it when you're young and can recover.
Yeah, Tiki, I totally agree with you here, man. I mean, you're going to pay him $340 million, mm-hmm. and you and I had no issue with the contract. We thought it was smart.
Yep.
If he becomes the player that everybody thinks he's going to become, that becomes a bit of a deal for the Padres down the road based on the trajectory of contracts. But if the young man can't swing with great confidence, that's a problem. He cannot be great if he is not fully healthy. And this is a long-term investment. This is not a little race, a short race, a sprint. This truly is a marathon. I mean, this is going to bring him into his 30s. They need to fix this, and they need to fix this now. And if that requires going in and cutting it up and repairing the labrum and reattaching some things so he can become the player we all want him to be, that's what you got to do. It's going to be painful now, but they need him to be healthy, and he's just that should never happen to a young player. Sorry. So we'll see if they take that route, and we'll see what the MRI tube yields. But that's not good. All right, T, coming up. So, you know, just because you're drafted by a team and it goes awry and they get rid of you and you start to bounce around a little bit, doesn't mean you can't find great success in Act 2. We'll give you a couple of the names, a couple of the stories, and find out if those stories can match up with Sam Darnold in Carolina. We'll hit that next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.